just talk a little bit.
And okay.
So we'll see how it picks up.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. That's good. Yeah, well, I thank you for your interest, really.
Oh.
And if it helps anybody, it's worth, you know?
Well, I think, you know, people kind of get limited into, this is how it's supposed to look, this is what I was raised with.
Yes.
Or they try to live in somebody else's shadow or do it for someone else. And the fact that you had that nurturing to give you permission and look at all you accomplished back when women
were
weren't
homebodies.
Doing that.
That's true.
Yeah.
But as I always,
it's a big deal.
As I always say, I was lucky. I had wonderful parents who my father treated me like a son. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, it's still today, I think the world is spoiled a little bit. And everybody expects, they don't realize they have to do it themselves. Mm-hmm.
And part of the fun is doing it yourself,
yes.
though. I mean, because then you can say, oh my gosh, look at.
Yes. Well, that's what it's about.
Yeah.
And I think, as I said, some of the kids are spoiled. You know, no, you don't have to buy. Oh, no, you don't have to do, you know. But you have to be your own person and your own personality. Mm-hmm. And you have to have your own feelings and know what you want to do.
Did you know you always wanted to do music? I mean, did it stir from you from the time you were little?
Well, yes.
Yeah?
I had feelings. I had feelings. And as I said, I was my father's last chance of being a son. Mm-hmm. So I was always by his side. And I go, 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 go. I would talk to the chickens. We had chickens, and I would talk to them. Don't, you know, think they would hear what I'm saying.
But they can feel the energy of that. Yeah.
But I think that's what taught me of the feelings that your voice has. Mm-hmm. It tells a lot. And I have to thank my parents. But as I said, I was my father's last chance of being a son, and I was by his side all the time, and I did things a little girl normally wouldn't do.
I know. When you said you did target practice or you were shooting, that
he'd say, well, I know you're a little girl, but you have to know how to do this. The war years. Not that you're going to do anything, but you have to protect yourself. Mm-hmm. Just have to know how to do it. But he built the town. Whatever he did, I had to do. Mm-hmm. And my mother was a mother. You know, I was lucky. I had a father who treated me like a son, and I had a mother who was my little patron saint, who just made sure I was okay. And Mary, who was my father's first wife's child, she was my patron saint. She was so proud of me. She would be by my side. You know, she was so proud. She made me feel like I was something.
So you were just nourished with love all the way around.
Yes. I didn't have any you know, even when if something went wrong, I still, well, there was a reason, you know. You had something else. So I was lucky. I had wonderful, wonderful parents. Mm-hmm. Wonderful
parents. When did you start playing the trombone?
In school.
Grade school or high school?
High school.
Yeah.
Dancing, and then the marching band in the school, you know, we had a marching band. And
how many girls were in the marching band? That's kind of what I thought.
I was the only female trombone player, too.
Well, that wasn't so, I mean, women playing horns wasn't.
Yeah, the war years.
Wait. Go back to high school, though. So you're a trombone player in a marching band. Did you get attitude or looks from the boys or the other people? Or is it just, we're all here to play music and who cares?
Yeah.
That's nice.
I had,
That's
you
nice.
Know, I learned a lot because my father built the town. Mm-hmm. You know, he took care of the Cottmans, the black families. Just God put them on this earth like he put us. They're human beings. Same thing if you're a boy or a girl. God put us on this earth. So I learned a lot from my parents.
And your mom really pushed you to go to college for music.
Oh, yeah, well, you know why? By that time, my father was in heaven. Mm-hmm. And my mother said, you deserve to have an education. You deserve to have a college education. In those days, little girls didn't go, and money was tight. But my mother made sure.
Did you have a desire, or did she kind of just think that you should?
You know what? Music ended up being my, you know, thing, how should I say it? I was proud because my father treated me like I was his son, mm-hmm. and I was so proud of what he did. Mm-hmm. So I had to build myself up to be something like my parents.
So he kind of gave you a roadmap of what it could look like.
Yes. Mm-hmm. My parents were very responsible. Mm-hmm. Very responsible.
Apparently. Yeah. So then you go to college. Your mother fights to get you into college.
She said she needed a payment plan. Half English, half Hungarian. And said, come on, sit down. So that's how I went to college.
And then you started your own band.
Yeah, I had my own
band. Pretty unusual for a woman, too.
Well, because it was the war years. Mm. And I entertained at the Valley Forge Military Hospital to entertain the wounded soldiers. But then all of a sudden I started to perform, you know. But
and what kind of music did you play?
Pop.
Which was what then?
Everything. I did the mambo, I did the waltz, I did Pettis Prado, stuff and everything, you know. I did it all.
And speaking of, you brought the mambo to the States, right?
Yeah, Pettis Prado.
And how did that come about?
Well, I used to, in those days, RCA, I did a lot of recording in England because it was cheaper recording this big living strings in England mm-hmm. than the United States. And the royal family of England treated me and thanked me. They really did. But then someone said, you know, you better go to Brazil. There's someone there that everybody's talking about, you know. So I went to Brazil. And there he is, swinging his hips. And I said, yep.
And you had that feeling, probably.
Swinging his hips. Mm-hmm. And Pettis Prado. So my parents, both my mother and my father, they had a way of training me to be who I was and not expect other people to do things that you should do. Mm-hmm. And just do it. Don't be afraid. My father built everything, the Cedarman, everything, you know. No, that Lindbergh has to cross the Atlantic. So, you know, who even thought about crossing the Atlantic, you know, with an airplane? My father did, and I christened it. You know, I think that it all depends on how you were grown up and where you were grown up and the sign of the times, you know. The world was just growing up in those days. Mm-hmm. And my parents came from Europe. And here they were, and they became very Americanized, and they wanted to make sure America was American, had everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every so often, I think, how did they ever think of coming to America, and how do they have the money to come to America?
Or the nerve. Yeah. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
To leave your country, you don't speak the language.
That's right. But they came.
Yeah. So you kind of got a download of just nerve and...
Yeah, well...
You just do it.
Yeah, that's like... My father had a brain to develop things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how come the seed room and things like that. He would develop. And I learned a lot from my parents.
And it's interesting because you did a lot of developing too.
And I was always by his side. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid.
Was your husband into music? How did you meet?
My husband was very involved in the business world.
Did you meet in New York, or how did you meet?
Well, you know, I was I traveled a lot, and when I was a musician, I would be all over the place. And I would meet him because he would be all over the place, too. And then, you know, met him. And the war years, too. And a lot of people would go to the Valley Forge Military Hospital to do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he would every so often be at the Valley Forge Military Hospital, too.
Oh, okay.
And so all of a sudden... we realized, you know, we met, he would come to, every so often he'd show up, you know, at Valley Forge Military Hospital.
So tell me, what was it like living in New York?
Oh, it was wonderful.
And you said you lived on the Upper East Side?
Yeah,
and
it was boring. It was high class, you know, up in the Upper East, you know, 79th Street up above 79th was high class, you know. And in those days, I thought, oh, you know, when I was somebody, I lived, but it was so boring. And then I moved down to 34th Street to the McAlpin. That was wonderful because that was across from Macy's, all the parades. I didn't have to do anything. I could look out my window, And Macy's in those days always had activity.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear that because I didn't know that would have been the case. You said they had music and...
Well, they would have a room where they would have little happenings. Mm-hmm. And I would go there. And they then... It's funny because then they, as I... Then when RCA and everything, then they were very happy that I'd be around. But I learned a lot, mm-hmm. So I wasn't afraid. I didn't think I was a girl or a boy. I just did what I thought I wanted to do. And
they supported you in doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Macy's was... they treated me like I... You know, and we used to have the parades. They always had parades, and there would always be on that street. And I would only have to look out of my window instead of being down there watching the parade. Sometimes I had my own band going up and down, but then eventually, you know, it was something else. But New York was a wonderful... I loved New York.
Was that after or before Nashville, when you developed Nashville?
Well...
Or during the time of?
New York was a little after Nashville, but it was sort of similar. It wasn't that far apart.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause you're from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, suburban.
So how did Nashville come about then? You worked for RCA.
Yeah. Well, somebody said, you better go to, where did I go first? Not to Nashville.
Memphis?
Where?
Memphis?
went down below because somebody's swinging his hips and you better, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I would travel.
So you're talking about Elvis.
Yeah. And I would travel. And here he is, swinging his hips. I bought his wife a fur coat because she was always by his side when he was singing. Mm-hmm. And those days, a fur coat was a sign of success.
So are you the one that signed Elvis?
Sure.
And did you help him develop his music? Well, I remember you telling me once before, he just moved to the music. It wasn't that he did it on purpose.
No, he
just
did it. That was Elvis.
He just felt that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I knew that he had a specific feeling, you could tell. Mm-hmm. And as I always say, I bought his wife a fur coat because she was always by his side, and that was a sign of success. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, he was wonderful to me, though. Wonderful.
Yeah. What was he like to work with? Hmm? What was he like to work with?
Well, let's say this. He was so thankful for me that I understood his talent and that I helped him. Mm-hmm. He was very thankful.
It seems to be a theme around you.
He was had a lot of feeling, a lot of feeling. And, you know, in those days, well, you know, he really was one of the big young fellow stars, you know, and he was just so thankful.
You speak that way too.
Well,
so it must, you know, you exude that and it comes back to you, because you've mentioned very often to me how thankful you are with your parents and your oldest sister Mary, who kind of looked after you. So you have a lot of gratitude inside of you.
Anyway, I was lucky.
And you worked with Frank Sinatra, and tell some of the people you've worked with.
Oh, I recorded Frank, Tommy Dorsey, Benny Goodman.
All the big names.
And I made them famous. And again, those were the war years. And feeling was very important. Because the fellows were, some of them were being killed.
Yeah.
And somehow or other, you could hear Elvis, even though he was swinging his hips, he had feelings that would reach your heart. Mm-hmm. You know, even though he was swinging his hips or whatever he was doing, you could close your eyes and hear him and feel what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And but again, as I said, you had to, feeling is important. It's in the music business, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
It's an emotion. Mm-hmm.
You didn't go into the music business for the fame or fortune, though. You went because you were drawn in and that was in your heart.
Well, I loved what I was doing.
I sometimes wonder if people just look at the fame and fortune and say, oh, I want that, and it doesn't really...
No. I loved what I was doing, and the world grew up then. There wasn't an RCA and stuff like that in those days, you know. And I helped the wounded soldiers. And I just...
It probably brought them pleasure hearing your band play.
Yeah. They needed help. They needed to have a smile, somebody who would say, thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, you're okay. We'll be there for you. And I did a lot.
That's very heartfelt mission work.
Valley Forge Military Hospital.
Yeah.
And
how did you end up at RCA? How did that unfold?
Well, all of a sudden there was this, they were starting a company, you know?
Are we talking from scratch? Are we talking from scratch? Like this was the beginning of RCA?
It was almost the beginning.
Yeah. They were starting a company. Go ahead.
Well, especially where, you know, and the music business was just growing up, the record business. And RCA was becoming, and because I had my band and I was all over the place, I got pulled into RCA. And then I ended up, you know, they said, well, a lot of the world needed the war years. You needed to have feeling. You had to have somebody to pick up your spirit.
Yeah.
And I used to go, and I had my own dance band, and I used to entertain the wounded soldiers, you know, in Valley Forge. And then before you knew it, all of a sudden, they realized how important music is to people.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a lifeline.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, someone opened up RCA and said, you know, we need you. We want to start a record company. Because people need to have fun in their life. You know, they have to be able to have music in their house. And that's how it worked.
So here you are at RCA. What was your day like? What kind of, I mean, did you work
here?
Really long hours or?
What, at RCA?
At RCA, yeah.
Oh, I was there all the time.
Yeah?
I didn't think I was working. I loved what I was doing.
Yeah. Was that kind of how the industry was? That people were pulled in because they just loved it so much?
Well, also, I traveled a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They would say, I was in England a lot because it was cheaper to record in England by Living Strings than in the United States. Money talked.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, RCA grew up. They said they were going to have a record company. And I was hired to be a record producer. And that's how come I traveled. England. And then Brazil with Pérez Prado swinging his hips. But someone would say, you better go. You know, we hear somebody saying something in Brazil. So I went to Brazil. RCA paid my way. I went all over.
You said you were in Africa?
Yeah.
Nice.
I'll never forget that.
Yeah? What was it like?
Well,
I've never been, so I don't know.
Our boat, I was with my own boat. We pulled up on the edge of Africa. We boat parked there. And when our boat pulled up, somehow or other, the natives saw the boat pull up. And there, I'll never forget, rows and rows, at least six rows of men stood there. Not women, men stood looking.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I said, you know, they need some goodies. So I had ice cream, candy, cookies, and everything, a bunch of stuff taken down to put on the ground for them. Because first the boat was standing there and they all looked, you know. So my men took it down. And then when they got down, I took one of them, one, you know, that I had, and I go like this. I open it up, and I go like this, you know, for them.
Oh, to show them how to eat it.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, I'll never forget it. They stood there, because I at the end, I go like this. They stood there.
As if to blow them a kiss?
Yeah.
Aw. And they were doing the same back to you. Nice.
And I'll never, it's something I'll never forget. Because they were rows.
Yeah.
And I go like this.
Blowing them kisses.
So
nice.
They go like this.
Aw.
So, you know, it taught me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Taught me a lot.
You just sound so fearless, especially for a woman in that era. It must have been the safety and confidence you just got in that warm environment that you grew up in that made you feel safe.
Well, as I said, you know.
Because you did a lot of things that were not normal.
You know, I was in the middle of the
Atlantic
Ocean christening a seed room. I didn't swim in those days, but I was young.
And you have a look on your face like, what did I know?
And I christened it, and, you know, and I thought, oh, and I was all dressed up. I thought I was Miss America. You know, when I christened it, I got all sopping wet. And I thought, well, okay.
You know. I'm still here.
So,
what advice would you have for people, young people, older people, whatever, any age? You don't sound like you have any boundaries of being a woman at all. You just did what was in your heart and what you were meant to do.
Well, you know what? People are people. You have to understand what the world is about. You almost have to understand that the world grew up. Who helped the world grow up? How did we learn to do what we're doing? How did we help each other? And we helped each other. And we had to understand each other's needs. And we have to understand that they physically are not capable, or mentally not capable, or financially not capable. But we had to understand those things, and we had to be there to help them. Mm-hmm. You just could not ignore people. Mm-hmm. You had to help them. In the war years, especially, you know.
Yeah.
And, well, any year, but there was very, very dominant.
Well, a lot of devastation and worry. Yeah. You didn't have any boundaries. I mean, it's like the boundaries didn't apply. You just kind of did what you were supposed to
do. Like, as I said, in the corner of the town was a black family. My father said, God put them here like he put us. They need to eat and they need to go to school. So my father made sure the kids went to school. Mm-hmm. And we had a big piece of property. We had chickens, we had eggs, we had vegetable gardens, we had everything. In those days, I guess now land is expensive, but in those days we had a huge piece of property. You know, we had a section where we had chickens, we had a section where we had vegetable gardens and fruit trees, and then we had a nice section where you could sit around at lunchtime and sit outside, you know.
So what would you say to aspiring musicians or singers or whatever? Would you have, because the time is different, but some of the things probably cross over to be the same.
Well, I think you have to have the feeling. You can't expect somebody to do it for you. You have to do it yourself, but you have to trust yourself. You have to know what you want. You just can't say, I want money. You have to know what you have to do to make money. And if you have a profession, you have to know what it's about. You just can't be a doctor and not know how to take care of a sick person. You can't be a musician without knowing how to play a trombone, you know.
I think you're a very blessed woman.
I give credit to my parents. And again, certainly my mother. And then his first wife died, and he had two daughters, and one of them was Mary. And Mary was my patron saint. Mm-hmm. I was her little girl. And I guess I'm saying family. Family was very, very close and very meaningful.
And probably even if you don't have a family that's like that, you can somehow create like that. Other people, you need to be around other people.
Well, you can, but I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot what life was about. Mm-hmm. Not just worrying about, oh, look at him. Look at him. Blah, blah, blah. No, why is he that way? You know, I learned a lot.
Well, it's been a treat to meet you. We've met a few different times, and my parents had your albums, and I just thought it was important for you to have them.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you doing this interview. I don't know who will hear it or where it will go,
thank you.
I think it's really important for people to know how much you developed from your heart and just believing that you could.
I think it's important because I'm sure today there are kids like I was, where money was not that big, or where your parents are not around, or something, where you have to just have the courage to do what you should do and not demand. Some people are spoiled and they expect the world to do for them. Some are spoiled. That's the problem today. And that's too bad. You can't expect. You have to do it yourself.
And you did a lot. A lot.
Well,
first woman producer of RCA.
Yeah.
You developed Nashville.
Yeah.
Living Strings, Living Voices, Easy Music.
Pettis Prado, the whole thing.
Elvis, Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, Swing His Hips, Elvis. Elvis, he was so good. He was so good to me. Thankful.
Was he nervous when he was in the studio?
Well, you know what? In the beginning, he was. But once he started to sing, that was it.
Something came over him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's then, love in your soul, for sure.
Yeah, I would say, nope, you're good. Mm-hmm. Don't worry, you're good. Do what you feel. Don't think of what I should tell you to do. Do what you think you should do.
So you got the encouragement, and you passed it on to others that you were working with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty special.
That's what it's about.
Pretty special.
And in those days, money, you didn't even think of money. Because money was tight.
Mm-hmm.
You had to do things to try to develop yourself so that you could earn the money.
Gotcha.
Just because you just don't get it for nothing. You have to do something.
Well, Ethel Gabriel, I sure appreciate you taking the time to have this conversation.
Well,
I hope it will help somebody else who's, you know, in line to be in the music profession and...
Well, you know what?
Hear what somebody of your caliber did.
They have to want to do it.
Yeah.
And they have to trust themselves that they know what they're doing and that they have a feeling. And they can't expect somebody else to train them. Yes, somebody can say, ugh, you know, a few little things, but they have to have the feeling.
So you nurtured that for a lot of artists.
Yeah.
And we're grateful.
Yeah. It's a whole different world, and money talks today, and it's but it talked years ago, too. You know, it was tough years ago, worse than now. I had wonderful parents. And I think that's another subject, because now parents, there for a while, parents were parents and the kids were going to school and it was a whole different thing, you know? They didn't realize there's feeling involved.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't go to school, you just don't do this, this is a... Not that you have to be thankful, but you have to think of how come and why and where am I going and how come and what is going to happen and what can I do to help it happen. Today the kids are pretty spoiled. I worry about them a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, because... I think their feeling is different. And God forbid someday they have the feeling that what it's all about, they won't know how to handle it.
You mean feeling as in focus?
Hmm?
You mean feeling as in focus? Their feeling is different, as in their focus is different?
It could be.
Yeah.
Money talks sometimes, nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is more expensive now than it used to be. And not only that, the world grew up. Now we have television, we have things, radio, we have movies, we have things that we never had before. And everybody wants those things. And you have to have money for it.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't have it without having money. And health. You have doctors, you have hospitals. But you have to have money.
Mm-hmm.
So nowadays, money talks. It's a little different, but it did in those days, but it was different because you had a garden and you could sometimes eat, you know, but still you needed money to go to school and to learn and, you know, to do things and to grow up. The kids today are pretty spoiled. I worry about them a little bit because, God forbid, although some of them are highly educated, you know, so that helps. But still, the emotional part is something else.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you fell into the niche that you loved, and it took you on many adventures in wonderful ways.
I can't complain. I'm very thankful. And I had a good life, wonderful, wonderful parents, and my sisters and my family. Even my sister's son, I'm here because of him. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, something got passed down through your genes, your family dynamics, whatever. Yeah. That
Nancy used to run this place, and Ed was my sister's son, and I'm here because of him.
Yeah.
And if I don't know if I have $2 or $200, Ed takes care of everything. Don't worry, you're okay. Don't worry, you're okay.
And he's the one that got you your replicas of your gold albums that hang on the walls right outside your room. They're beautiful.
I used to have my music room that had gold records.
No.
And I should have watched when they were selling my furniture. They sold all my gold records.
You had a financial disaster there with along the way, and
yeah,
you had to sell your things.
Well, you know, when my gold records, I went to the person who bought them. I said, they weren't supposed to be sold. I'd like to buy them back. Oh, no, no. I said, ask my name. It's a tradition that doesn't exist. So he has all my gold records. Mm. I have a few.
That are in the hall, yeah.
But they were because, you know, I had my music room, and they were in a different room where I had a piano or something, and I had them over the piano, you know. Mm-hmm. But this was the music room, right?
You played trombone. Did you play other instruments as well?
I knew how, but trombone was my favorite.
Yeah.
I could piano, but not...
Nah. Not like trombone.
No.
Gotcha.
But...
I think as we wrap this up, I'd like to leave a little bit of your recordings of those records that I brought over and just have people hear a taste of. I don't know that they would be able to hear that otherwise, so maybe I can just play a little bit of that as we close up.
Thank you
for this.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
I thank you, really.
And I know the Rochester Hall of Fame is inducting you this April 2014.
Well, you know, if the kids learn, that's what's important. You know, like I grew up the first female record producer, you know? It's if you have something in your heart that you feel, you got to do it, whatever it is. God put us here and gave us the opportunity to do what we feel. And I'm lucky.
Well, it sounds like it's been a wonderful journey.
Yeah.
And it's not over. We'll see you at the Hall of Fame. Thank you.
You're a dear. Thank you. Thank you.
Face says a lot. Thanks so much, Ethel. It's been a pleasure.
Okay.